That's The Earl of Oxford's March by William Byrd with the Empire Brass Quintet, joined by Scottish drummer Gordon Bell from their CD called King's Court and Celtic Fair, which I actually played a little bit from on yesterday's program. And this program is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. On the show today, coming up, I'll be talking with singer, songwriter, and fiddle player Sarah Watkins, formerly of the Grammy Award-winning trio Nickel Creek. She is now on her own with her own band and has recently put out her second solo album. She is going to be opening for and participating in the complete show with singer-songwriter Jackson Brown, who's going to be at, they will all be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield tonight on their Visiting Artists series. So I'll be talking with Sarah Watkins later on in the program. First, though, we have two actors and the stage director for the current production by Red Mask Players in Danville. It's the comedy called Arms and the Man by George Bernard Shaw, which was one of his early plays and has always had a certain success. The show opens this Friday through Sunday, two weeks from now. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Two Fridays from now, November 2nd running through the 4th, and then the second weekend is the 9th through the 11th at the Catherine Randolph Theater on Vermilion Street in Danville. Bev Neese is director for Arms and the Man, and then we have the two cast members, Julia Reynolds and Chad Myler, with us. Thanks to all for coming in.
Hello.
And somehow I've got myself ahead by a week mentally. Mentally, I don't want to do that too often, or we lose a lot of time that way.
Yeah.
Any event, thanks for coming in. And is this the first show of the season, or have you had one in the fall already?
This is the first one.
This is the first big one. Somehow it doesn't seem that Shaw's plays get done that much anymore, or am I imagining that?
No, they don't get done very often.
And what made you, were you the one that picked it for the season, or did the committee pick it?
A committee picked it.
And were you involved in the committee?
Well, the committee picked a group of plays to submit to the board, and I'm on the board. And then the board read them and picked three from the ones they submitted, and Arms and the Man was one of them.
And did somebody come to you and say, hey, Bev, would you direct this play? Or did you say, I'd really like to do this one?
I said, I'd really like to do it.
Why?
I don't know. It's just an interesting show. And I like period shows real well, too. And this is set in the 1880s. It just caught my attention. I liked it real well.
Serbo-Bulgarian War, which doesn't seem all that far-fetched to our modern time.
Right.
It seems. Well, it is a comedy, but it's about war, it's about marriage, it's about love. I suppose if you mix all those things, you can come up with something funny. But what's the gist of this one, and what are some of the themes that go on?
Okay, well, Bulgaria is at war, and it starts in November of 1885, and the war has just started. And it's actually a very short one, because by March of 1886, it's now over. Now, Act One takes place in the November 1885, and that's where our two main characters meet. And then March of 1886, the war is over, and Raina's father has come home from the war, and the man that she met in Act One has returned, and her fiancé, Sergius, has also returned.
Betrothed.
You're betrothed, yes. And it's... I can't remember where I was going with that.
But he's apparently given an ironic title, I understand, Arms and the Man, quotation from somebody who was glorifying war, but he doesn't exactly feel that way.
He doesn't glorify it. He's actually making fun of the men who wage war. There's one scene in there where they talk about how when the battle starts, one side comes charging, and the side that's being charged at, the Serbians, they have, or Bulgarians, they don't have their ammunition ready. And so, you know, it's funny the way he talks about it, the charge, and Raina's all thrilled that her Sergius is leading the charge, and, you know, that the other side wasn't ready for him, and it was just a big mess.
So who's describing this? Is this the Chad's character?
Yeah, Chad's character, Bluntschli, is charging, describing the charge.
After, so she believes this thing is a big heroic event, and you're like, well, yeah.
Yes.
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
Look at it from the other side, you know, look at it from my shoes and what I'm seeing, what my character is seeing.
Yeah.
And your character, Chad, initially she doesn't know who he is. He's just somebody who shows up at her doorstep.
Yes, he's kind of trying to fight and hide, and he's adverse to fighting at all cost. He basically is hiding out, trying to get his way back to his regiment, and he sneaks into this young girl's room at night.
And he turns out to be a captain in the Bulgarian army.
Yes. Well, it's more deep than that. He is actually, I don't want to give away too much of the play, but he is he really doesn't have, he's not Serbian. You understand what I'm saying? He is a professional soldier. He sought adventure as a young man, you know? So he is, winds up falling in love when he didn't expect to, you know?
Those are supposed to be the best kind, right?
Yes.
At least in theory. And her character is Raina Petkoff, her being Julia Reynolds. And I know you brought a few scenes, so why don't we, is the first one from early in the play?
Yes,
so
yes,
get some of the background of this?
Where they meet.
Oh, well then, okay. That's a good place to start.
Let me set you up, set the scene. There's a gun battle waging outside, and she has just dimmed the lights, and they told her to stay still and, you know, keep the shutters closed. And so anyway, imagine a bunch of gunfire, okay, and then breaking it. Shh! Don't call out, or you'll be shot. Be good, and no harm will happen to you. Take care. There's no use in trying to run away. Remember, if you raise your voice, my pistol will go off. Strike a light. Let me see you. Do you hear? Excuse my disturbing you, but you recognize my uniform, Servian. If I'm caught, I shall be killed. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Well, I don't intend to get killed if I can help it. Do you understand that?
I suppose not. Some soldiers, I know, are afraid of death.
All of them, dear lady. All of them. Believe me, it is our duty to live as long as we can and kill as many as the enemy as we can. Now, if you raise an alarm...
You will shoot me. How do you know that I am afraid to die?
Ah, but suppose I don't shoot you. What will happen then? Why, a lot of your cavalry, the greatest blackguards in your army, will burst into this pretty room of yours and slaughter me here like a pig, for I will fight like a demon. They shan't get me into the street to amuse themselves with. I know what they are. Are you prepared to receive them in that sort of present undress?
Oh.
It's rather scanty, eh? Stop, where are you going?
Only to get my cloak.
Ah, good idea. No, I'll keep the cloak. You take care that nobody comes and sees you without it. This is a better weapon than the pistol.
It is not the weapon of a gentleman.
It's good enough for a man with only you to stand between him and death. Do you hear? If you are going to bring those scoundrels in on me, you shall receive them as you are. No use, I'm done for. Quick, wrap yourself up. They're coming.
Oh, thank you.
Never mind. Keep out of the way. It will not last long.
I'll help you. Hide yourself. Oh, hide yourself quick behind the curtain.
There is just half a chance if you keep your head. Remember, 9 soldiers out of 10 are born fools. If they find me, I promise you a fight, a devil of a fight.
So an early scene, the meeting of Raina Petkoff, who is supposed to be about how old?
23.
Oh, very precisely. 23 years old. And somebody whose name she doesn't know at this point, who is kind of running away, but kind of trying to get back to the lines, something like that, from George Bernard Shaw's play Arms and the Man, which is opening on Friday, November 2nd, in a performance by Red Mask Players in Danville. This almost sounds like the plot for a Mozart or Rossini opera. You know, I mean, there's a number of those where somebody sneaks in the balcony trying to, impersonate a man impersonating a woman, or maybe the other way around, and somebody falls in love and they didn't mean to, and so on. No singing in this, however.
No, we just do plays. We don't do musicals.
Is that true? Always?
Always.
I guess I'd forgotten that. We've had a Red Mask folk on here for the last year or two, And I guess I hadn't pieced together. So many theater companies seem to emphasize musicals.
Yeah. Well, Danville has a musical company, Danville Light Opera.
Well, no, that's true. So it's deliberate intent not to overlap
the
things that are going on. Sounds like a good way to go with it. So this is a play with not very many characters. You got
Eight characters.
1, 2, 3, 4. And I counted 7. So, and what do I know? I'm not involved in it.
Well, there's one character that only has 3 lines. He's in one short scene.
But are you the bulk of it is carried by your 2 characters?
Well, the middle section is the other characters. I forget the actual word. Tertiary characters or the
supporting
the subplot basically is the chunk of the second act. You know, or it tells what happens in the third act. It sets it up, of course, you know, beginning, middle, end. But it's mainly the other characters.
The subplot being?
Well, I have to come back, and there's basically, they help me escape this. This young lady I fall in love with, she sneaks me out in the first act, her and her mother. But I don't want to give away too much of the story, but it's under the nose of a major of another of the Bulgarian army. So it's about this. It basically sets up the third act, which is where it is the denouement. You know what I'm saying? Basically, I don't want to give away too much of the show because then why would anybody come to see this show?
Yeah.
You understand? There's like a mixed up identities and a hidden code, a photograph. I mean, it's.
Really does sound like a comic opera.
Yeah.
I don't know how much opera you've seen, but it seems like any of a number of them. Well, scene number 2 that we have, this looks like it comes from part way through the book yet.
Yeah.
What do we need to know that has already gone on, or is it self-explanatory?
Well, the soldiers who were looking for me have already been into the room, and we're having an exchange about a gun that was left on the it frightened her, and I had told her that I have no ammunition, but so here goes. All right.
Frighten me? Do you know, sir, that though I am only a woman, I think I am at heart as brave as you?
I should think so. You haven't been under fire for 3 days as I have. I can stand 2 days without showing it much, but no man can stand 3 days. I'm as nervous as a mouse. Would you like to see me cry?
No.
If you would, all you would have to do is scold me, just as if I were a little boy and you my nurse. If we're in camp now, they'd play all sorts of tricks on me.
I'm sorry. I won't scold you. You must excuse me. Our soldiers are not like that.
Oh, yes, they are. There are only 2 sorts of soldiers, old ones and young ones. I've served 14 years. Half of your fellows never smoked powder before. Why? How is it that you've just beaten us? Sheer ignorance of the art of war, nothing else. I never saw anything so unprofessional.
Oh, was it unprofessional to beat you?
Well, come. Is it professional to throw a regiment of cavalry on a battery of machine guns with the dead certainty that if those guns go off, not a horse or a man will ever get within 50 yards of the fire? I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it.
Did you see the great cavalry charge? Oh, tell me about it. Describe it to me.
You never saw a cavalry charge, did you?
How could I?
Perhaps not. Well, it's a funny sight. It's like slinging a handful of peas against a window pane. First one comes, then 2 or 3 close behind him, and then all the rest in a lump.
Yes, first one, the bravest of the brave.
You should see the poor devil pulling at his horse.
Why should he pull at his horse?
Well, it's running away with him, of course. Do you suppose the fellow wants to get there before the others and be killed? Then they all come. You can tell the young ones by their wildness and their slashing. The old ones come bunched up under the number 1 guard. They know they are mere projectiles and that it's no use trying to fight. The wounds are mostly broken knees from the horses cannoning together.
Oh, but I don't believe the first man is a coward. I believe he is a hero.
That's what you'd have said if you'd seen the first man in charge today.
I knew it. Tell me about him.
Are we allowed to say who this is going to be, or...
Yeah.
It's my betrothed.
Your betrothed. Yes. Sergius. And we have from Danville's Red Mask Players, Julia Reynolds in the role of Raina Petkoff and Chad Myler in the role of the man she eventually discovers is Captain Bluntschli, I guess, or Bluntschli, which is a nice name. Marriage is overall a theme as well, and so there's the war conflict, but also the notion of who should you marry and so on, because you're engaged to this guy, betrothed to this guy, and you know, things don't turn out quite the way you thought. Any particular challenges for you, Julia, in playing this particular role?
I've just had a lot of fun with this part because my character is kind of a rich, spoiled brat, you know, and she thinks her life is an opera, kind of like what you've said. She envisions it that way, all of the heroics and noble things, and she's kind of putting on this act before everyone until somebody, Captain Bletchley, calls her out on it, and then she realizes that she can really be herself with someone else. So I've really had a lot of fun playing that.
Is that something you have any particular identification with? Or?
Maybe. Gosh, I'll have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounded like it right there.
Yeah.
First play with Red Mask or not?
This is my fourth play with Red Mask.
And previous ones were?
Angel Street and Romantic Fever, and most recently, All My Sons.
That was from last season.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I do remember from seeing the various play lists for Red Mask that you seem to specialize in finding some of the perhaps older plays that used to be more popular than they are now.
Yeah. Last year's effort was to do shows that had been done sometime in the last 75 years.
Pretty good stretch. But yeah, that had been done by Red Mask.
By Red Mask, yeah. Because it was our 75th season and we were honoring that. So we tried to pick one from each 25 years that we thought the audience would receive well and do those last year.
And did they?
Yes, we did, yes. We had good audiences for all of them.
And this one, with a fairly compact cast, has to make it fairly easy to cast, or not necessarily.
Well, it all depends.
You know, I shouldn't say easy, but I mean at least if you have a really good turnout, you have a good selection.
Right. Yeah, it just depends on your turnout more than anything else. Sometimes you don't get enough men or you don't get enough women. And, you know, so maybe you're calling people to come in for a third night of auditions to see, try to pick people. But I got lucky this time. I had enough people that we were able to make the selection after two nights.
Good. So you got the people you wanted. Well, we have one more short scene. Does this come from which act then?
This is from the third act.
The third act.
What a country. They make cannons out of cherry trees and their officers send for their wives to keep discipline.
You look ever so much nicer than when we last met. What have you done to yourself?
Washed, brushed, good night's sleep and breakfast, that's all.
Did you get back safely that morning?
Quite, thanks.
Were they angry with you for running away from Sergius's charge?
No, they were glad, because they'd all just ran away themselves.
It must have made a lovely story for them, all that about me and my room.
Capital story, but I only told it to one of them, a particular friend.
On whose discretion you could absolutely rely?
Absolutely.
He told it all to my father and Sergius the day you exchanged the prisoners.
No, you don't mean that, do you?
I do indeed. But they don't know that it was in this house that you hid. If Sergius knew, he would challenge you and kill you in a duel.
Well, bless me, then don't tell him.
Can you realize what it is to me to deceive him? I want to be quite perfect with Sergius. No meanness, no smallness, no deceit. My relation to him is the one really beautiful and noble part of my life. I hope you can understand that.
You mean that you wouldn't like him to find out the story about the ice pudding was, you know.
Oh, don't talk of it in that flippant way. I lied. I know it. But I did it to save your life. He would have killed you. That was the second time I ever uttered a falsehood. Do you remember the first time?
No. Was I present?
Yes. And I told the officer who was searching for you that you were not present.
True. I should have remembered it.
Oh, it is natural that you should forget it first. It cost you nothing. It cost me a lie.
My dear young lady, don't let this worry you. Remember, I am a soldier. Now, what are two things that happen to a soldier so often that he comes to think nothing of them? One is hearing people tell lies. The other is getting his life saved in all sorts of ways by all sorts of people.
And so he becomes a creature incapable of faith and of gratitude.
Do you like gratitude? I don't. If pity is akin to love, gratitude is akin to the other thing.
Gratitude? If you are incapable of gratitude, you are incapable of any noble sentiment. Even animals are grateful. Oh, I see now exactly what you think of me. You were not surprised to hear me lie. To you, it was something I probably did every day, every hour. That is how men think of women.
There's reason in everything. You said you only told 2 lies in your whole life. Dear young lady, isn't that rather a short allowance? I'm a quite straightforward man myself, but it wouldn't last me the whole morning.
Do you know, sir, that you are insulting me?
I can't help it. When you get in that noble attitude and speak in that thrilling voice, I admire you, but I find it impossible to believe a single word you say.
Captain Bluntschli!
Yes?
Do you mean what you said just now? Do you know what you said just now?
I do.
I? Oh, how did you find me out?
Instinct, dear young lady. Instinct and experience of the world.
Julia Reynolds as Raina Petkoff and Chad Myler as Captain Bluntschli from Arms and the Man by George Bernard Shaw. We also have director Bev Neese with us, and they will be opening that play, Red Mask Players will, that is, on Friday, November the 2nd, and it runs through the 4th and then the 9th through the 11th. 8 o'clock shows on Friday and Saturday, and a 2 o'clock matinee on the 2 Sundays. It'll be at the Catherine Randolph Theater on North Vermilion Street in Danville. For more information, you can go to redmaskplayers.com and get all the details you need on that particular production, how to get tickets, and so on. Thank you very much for coming in, and best of luck with the show.
Thank you. Definitely.
Stay tuned for my conversation with Sarah Watkins, formerly of the acoustic trio Nickel Creek. She's going to be with Jackson Brown at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tonight at 7:30. Our broadcast is made possible by these business partners: Agrigold Hybrids of Mahomet, Charles M. Hundley Champagne, Michael Walker Consulting Urbana, and Bates Commodities of Normal. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible. We thank you very much. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was a song called Bygones from the debut solo CD by Sarah Watkins from 2009. She is going to be opening up for Jackson Brown at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield tonight at 7:30. And she's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. And she tells me that we're likely the first radio station to have played that song.
I think you are, yeah.
And why would that be? It's such a wonderful song, kind of haunting.
I thank you. It was when I was making that record, that was the last song that I wrote that made it on there. I wrote it, or I finished it, I guess, a week or so going into the studio. And I liked it because it was totally different from everything else on the record, and in the hunting qualities. That's what I was trying to get out of it. So I'm glad that you feel that way. You know, there aren't many radio stations that market haunting music, but maybe this time of year, maybe it'll be a pickup right before Halloween.
Well, maybe. I didn't even think about it that way. I tend to go for sounds that are just a little bit different, and for that matter, the whole record, your debut was, everything's a little different from everything else on it. I mean,
yeah,
I suppose some things are a little closer to others, but it's pretty eclectic in
it's
a really
true.
Nice
it's,
way.
It is kind of eclectic. And you know what's funny is, like, I actually, it would have been a lot more schizophrenic had I made that record a year before. This was a much more concise version of a song selection. But, you know, it was my first record, and my priority was that it was music that was really meaningful for me at the time, especially, and music that I grew up hearing. There's a Jimmy Rogers cover. There's a Norman Blake song and a John Hartford song, and the other half of the record is my own. And I wanted that record to be a home base, basically, as I was figuring out what my solo career would look like. So I was kind of collecting my sources and staying close to home. I didn't want to be too hasty to commit to any one direction. I just kind of wanted to hunker down with this eclectic folk music that I grew up listening to.
Well, let's give a little background for those who don't know your name or who may know your name if I say that you were for almost 20 years in the band Nickel Creek, which is an acoustic trio, 1989 to 2007. And so that's a massive commitment of your life, particularly. Is this really correct that you started performing in this band when you were 8?
Yeah, but it wasn't good. It was just
still
kid stuff. You know, we played local museum openings and street fairs and local bluegrass festivals as the novelty kid band that played first, and warmed the hearts of older people. and then we just kind of kept going. And, almost 20 years.
Was it always the same three of you, you and your brother Sean on guitar, and then mandolinist Chris? I always forget, did he say his name Thiele or Thiele?
Thiele, with Thiele, like really, but with T-H. And his dad played bass for the first 11 years, and then we started traveling a lot, and that was a little less reasonable to expect of a grown man with a family who hadn't really bargained for that. Scott was a great player, but we ended up playing with a few different bass players, but Sean and Chris and I were always the core of it.
So a good chunk of your life, however early it began musically, but also I guess it began pretty bluegrassy and graduated to lots of different kinds of things. I was reading on the Nickel Creek website, there's a nice bio of the group at the time that your latest CD came out, the last CD came out, and Chris Thiele is talking about genre blending. And I've never heard it put quite this way before, so I'm just going to quote him, if you don't mind, and then ask you about how this relates to what you might be doing. He says, quote, "If we're going to blend genres, we'd like it to be genre soup, where you can't see what's in it, as opposed to genre stew, where everything is very defined." And I know
he used to say that all the time. It's a bisque, Chris. It's a bisque. Puree. Don't, you can see what's in a soup.
Well, yeah, I was thinking that, but
come on.
It's not as chunky in this.
He's got his soup qualities all wrong. That was a goal. Most people don't really want to be super transparent as to who their sources are, but we had high goals in that band, and I had a whole lot of fun. And I think it's still a very good goal to have, you know, to be taking in so much that you sort of digest it in a unique way, and then do with those sources things that that might be unique to you. That definitely was the goal in the band, and that's, I think, the goal of a lot of artists.
So now that you're on your second CD, it's called Sun, Midnight Sun, came out earlier this year, and it still has a lot of different feels to it. Maybe not quite as eclectic as the first one. And given your comment earlier that you didn't want to commit to any particular direction in the first one, how does this genre soup or bisque thing seem to be working for you at this point? Do you think of
really
it that way
about
or not?
It. I'm not super worried about people being able to trace my sources. I just want everything to sound like it comes from me, at least, you know, whether it comes from me via John Prine or it comes to me via Garrison Keillor or whoever I'm listening to, you know. I just want it to come from me. I think that's up to me to digest things and to try and not be redundant and just repeat what other people have said, but try and interpret music and life through my own eyes and then convey it. I wanted this record to I didn't want to repeat myself. I wanted it to reflect where I am now. And so I roped in Blake Mills to produce the record. And because I had written these songs and I had a few covers, and I brought them to a good solid place, I thought. But I they weren't quite to where I thought they should be. So I roped him in to basically have his input and, you know, help me rethink some chords, some arrangements, and some ways to interpret these songs. And I love collaborating with people. I really do. I get tired of myself very quickly. And so I was, and I've been very lucky throughout my career to be able to collaborate with world-class players and thinkers.
Well, we'll talk about collaborations in just a minute. Let's hear something from the new album. It's called Sun, Midnight Sun. The song I thought we'd hear is called Impossible.
Okay.
Yeah, some wonderful vocals on here from the group. I love your gentle fiddle playing on it.
Thank you.
And it's Sarah Watkins, who's going to be opening up for Jackson Browne tonight at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield for a 7:30 start of that show. She's my guest on Live and Local. Song Impossible by Sarah Watkins from her CD called Sun, Midnight Sun, out earlier this year. And she'll be in Springfield tonight opening for Jackson Browne. She's my guest on Live and Local. On the, you mentioned just before we heard that song, getting Blake Mills to produce. And he also was part of the core trio of the group, yourself, Blake Mills, and then one-third of Nickel Creek. Your brother Sean on guitar in that mix as well, and then I assume adding some other instrumentalists besides?
A few, but not many. Really, only Vermont Tench came in and played some keyboard stuff, but Blake, for the most part, performed. He did all the overdubbing, and I wanted it to... I knew that it was going to be a overdub record, lots of discovering the songs in the studio, which was very different from my first record, which I wanted to be largely performed. So we would arrange the songs ahead of time, get the band in a big room and play through the song a handful of times and get the right take. And a lot of those vocals were live too. And this record, I wanted to discover the songs a little bit in the studio, but they still needed to have a foundation. Sometimes the risk of doing an overdub record is a lot of times it's hard to find the essence of a song if you strip it down and you have to perform it with two or three people. And I wanted at the base of each song for the arrangement to be able to stand with just a few people. And so we started each song like that outside the studio. Would sit down and in a little triangle and work through the stuff and find a good method for each song, good sort of philosophy starting point rhythmically and harmonically, and sometimes Blake and Sean would go in there together. Sometimes it would just start with a little wobbly rumble and we would build things piece by piece, but generally we started the things with Sean and Blake in there playing their guitar parts off of each other, and then we would build from there.
So now that you've done one record, as you call it, a performance record, and one as an overdub record, I haven't ever heard him quite described that way, which I really like. Do you have a preference?
It's really common. A lot of records are overdubbed. They'll just start with drums and bass. It has to be a blend of both for me. And the trick to... And I think I'll continue to do both methods, you know, forever. There are advantages to both. And even when you do performances, you have, like, a band performance, you have you can add things afterwards. It's fine. But there is something to the performance when everyone just has to play everything pretty much right together, and you find this groove, and you you're all in it together. You know, you try and stay in the moment, and that can be a really special thing with the right players. But the way we did Sun, Midnight Sun, the new record, it allowed for us to figure out these songs a little bit, with just a couple of minds being put together, a few minds and lots of instruments, and it was definitely the right way to do this record because I didn't know exactly what I wanted out of them. I needed this process for it.
For the new one.
For this record, for Sun, Midnight Sun.
Well, just by way of contrast, since you've described the two processes a bit, let's go back to the first one, and this is another tune that I especially liked off of it. It's called Long Hot Summer Days. Kind of a blues, really bluesy tune, and I love your solo vocal here that is
going
on.
Thanks. Yeah, this is a John Hartford song that I learned a long time ago. I'm a huge John Hartford fan, and I learned this one because I was doing some solo shows, and he performs this song, or he did. He's passed, but he would do it just solo, fiddle, and vocal, and tapping with his feet. And I'm sure he did it other ways, but that's the version that I fell in love with, and the band of this was so great. Gillian Welch, the songstress, played electric guitar on this, and Dave Rawlings, typically the guitar soloist in that band, plays drums, and that was really fun. I loved that we just sort of we called them in. I just sort of like, you play drums, right, Dave? You just come on in. You probably can do this great, and he's. And Gil, I knew she'd mess around with guitar, with electric guitar, so it was really fun. And then Byron House was playing bass, and Tim O'Brien plays or sings some harmony on it. It was really fun. I enjoyed recording this song.
Well, I enjoyed listening to it, and we'll share it with our listeners right now. Long Hot Summer Days, it's called, from Sarah Watkins' debut solo CD from a few years ago. On Live and Local on FM 90.9. John Hartford's tune, Long Hot Summer Days, as re-rendered by Sarah Watkins and colleagues from a few years ago on her debut CD. Sarah Watkins will be opening tonight at 7:30 for singer-songwriter Jackson Brown in Springfield at Sangamon Auditorium. The show starts at 7:30. And wondered how you hooked up with Jackson Brown in the first place. How long have you known him and worked with him?
I've known Jackson for probably 6 or 7 years now. I don't remember exactly the first time that we met, but I think it was at Largo. I think somebody might have brought him down to see the Watkins Family Hour, which is this monthly residency that my brother and I do in Los Angeles, and we've done it for almost 10 years now. He's been a big part of it over the years. He agreed to come down and sing on a few songs on my record, which was really fun. You know, there's only a few people playing on the record, and then a handful of my friends came down and sang. And this one, it was Blake's idea to put the gang vocal on.
The gang vocal?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of people. There are harmony parts in it. It's not just all unison, but it's just supposed to sound like a bunch of people in the background. And
I wrote it down as a nice group vocals, but I like gang vocal much
gang
better.
Gang vocal is what you call it in the studio.
Oh, that's a real term, huh?
Yeah.
I have to try to remember that. I like it.
So there's this simple clogging step that my friend showed me over the years, and I was just doing it in the control room while Sean and Blake were tracking the guitar parts. And we were rushed at the end of the day trying to figure out what to do with the drums. And so we patterned, Blake played a drum pattern that was based off of this clogging pattern.
So is this song your tune?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed exploring both of these. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I'm sure listeners will enjoy hearing you if they're able to go tonight to Sangamon Auditorium. It's at the University of Illinois Springfield on the Visiting Artist Series. Sarah Watkins opening for Jackson Browne.
It's been a really fun show, I should say. You've been generous to talk about my record, but the show is really great and really collaborative. Jackson's band helps me out on a bunch of songs. He sings with me. We get to share the stage. A large part of his set, and it's been a unique tour to be on and a lot of fun.
So I've been misdescribing it, saying that you're opening. It really is with special guest Sarah Watkins.
Well, I am opening, but it's very collaborative.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sarah Watkins tonight with Jackson Browne at Sangamon Auditorium. More information at sangamonauditorium.org on the show. And for more information on Sarah Watkins, I forgot to write it down. Is it just sarahwatkins.com.
Sarah with no H, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and there's a Watkins Family Hour podcast that's free on iTunes and other places. There's so many ways to find out what's happening.
To find out more about Sarah Watkins. Well, thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you for having me.
The song is called You and Me, Sarah Watkins with Jackson Browne and other members in the gang here on Live and Local.
I remember the light.
Sarah Watkins with Jackson Browne in the background vocals with some others as well. It's called You and Me from her latest CD out earlier this year called Sun, Midnight Sun. Sarah Watkins and Jackson Browne will be at Sangamon Auditorium tonight at 7:30 at the University of Illinois Springfield, part of their Visiting Artists Series. I hope you've enjoyed our program on Live and Local today. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we'll be back with another show tomorrow from 4 to 5. Here are some events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next few days. Clarinetist David Gresham of the Illinois State University faculty will be giving a recital at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. That concert starts at 8 o'clock tonight. It's the Ark Ovrutsky Quintet playing at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. At Clark Bar in Champaign, there's a benefit for Paul Sabuco with Gloria Rubel, Jammin' Jimmy Bean, Cliff Stoker, and Donna Nelson. That starts at 7 o'clock this evening. One of the University of Illinois jazz combos, this one led by Joan Hickey, is going to be at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Donnie Heitler has his weekly solo jazz keyboard gig at the Great Impasta in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. It's the weekly traditional Irish music session at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 8:30. Another weekly event, the Gunnysack Review of Bluegrass and Gospel Music, in which guests are welcome to join in. I guess nobody's ever a guest there. You can be participants if you like. That's going to be at the Yoder Center in Arthur each Wednesday at 7 o'clock. I looked over one event happening tonight. It's the Mugdock Pipers, as in Highland Bagpipes, going to be in the cozy confines of the Clark Lindsay Retirement Home Activity Room. That's in, where is Clark Lindsay? That in Champaign or Urbana? I've forgotten. It's on Windsor Road in any event, tonight at 7 o'clock, and it's a free program. And that's what we have time to mention on the program today. Our broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elm and University in the historic Trevett Mansion across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owens Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana. with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 68 degrees outside. We're expecting a partly cloudy sky tonight with a low of 58. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high temperature around 78 degrees. And then Thursday, mostly sunny, windy, the high around 80 degrees. All Things Considered is next.